Good morning, honorable members. I declare this meeting open. This is our second meeting for the morning. As far as I'm concerned, and we are running from one to the other one. I said to Advocate Mandela this morning, we're doing the Comrade Madison just over 12 months, not in one day. Also, welcome to the stakeholders. We will give them opportunity to introduce themselves. Secretary, are there any apologies? Honorable Zondi is off sick. Yes, it's a permanent apology. And Honorable Geller. Right. Can you accept your apologies? Thank you. This proposal for sentence. Honorable members, the minutes were circulated to you in advance. That's the minutes of the 9th of July. I thank you that you have read through it. I'm putting the minutes to you, page 1. Minutes of the 9th of July. Where we dealt with the registry report, orientation papers, etc., and the adoption of the committee program at that stage. Page 1, I put to honorable members, page 2, I put to honorable members, page 3. Proposal by Honorable Pombranda as a seconder. There's a seconder as well. Thank you very much, honorable members. That deals with the minutes. Honorable members, this is a very important engagement this morning. We've got one of the leading departments. All departments are leading, but specific COCTA, Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs. Also in the mandate dealing with intergovernmental relations. It's not only local government. If you read section 154 of the Constitution, it's very clear that national provincial departments must assist municipalities to deliver on their mandate. So it affects intergovernmental relations. And we will be dealing with this department throughout the next 5 years, specifically when we engage with municipalities. Regarding, as far as the Finance Committee is concerned, the fiscal position of municipalities. And the MFMA is very clear in terms of section 52 up to section 71. What is the role of the mayor? It's not there only to conduct a council meeting. He's got a very, very serious role to play regarding the finances of that municipality. He's in the same position principally as the premier of the province. That stops at the mayor and the troika, the CFO and the municipal manager. That's why this engagement is very crucial, and I'm going to ask the Director General to take us through, but first introduce the team. It's our first meeting, so the honorable members will also go through that exercise to introduce themselves. My name is Charles Rieu, and I'm from the biggest province in Northern Cape. On my left-hand side, down the road, please.
Good morning, everybody. I am Farad Ishak, and I am from Mpumalanga, the beautiful province with the beer where the sun never sets.
Any dreams? You seen Farad's wishing cut?
Good morning. My name is Tisni Motara. I'm from Gauteng.
Good morning, sir, and honored members. I'm Ansela Chomunyo from Eastern Cape, Salga, rep to the NCOP. Thanks, sir.
A special welcome to Salga. Thanks, sir. I want you, honorable councillor, to be part of those meetings throughout.
Thanks, sir.
If you can't be here, second someone to come in your place.
No way. Thanks,
sir.
Thank you.
Mungole Gamedan here, because we see the most interesting hand in North of it.
Let's take the department.
Morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Gigi Gardner. I'm the head of the Office of the Director General in the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning. My name is Fusi Matonsela, Director General of the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Genevieve Lydia Sebejo. I'm the DDG responsible for strategic planning, monitoring, and evaluation in the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Toto Sigidi. I'm responsible for intergovernmental fiscal relations.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Sharon Adams from the Auditor General's Office.
To go together, COFA and the AC. Nebo, you're sitting down there at the bottom, the tail end of the aeroplane.
A very good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Lebo Hantik. I am the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Department, COCTA. Thank you.
Are there any other staff members, starting here from Mr. Hentu?
Zoran Hentu.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Simon Mwang. I'm a researcher for the committee.
Good morning, my name is Esther Mugu, I'm the content advisor for the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, I am
Tao means lion.
Good morning, I'm not before Babu, I'm a committee assistant to this committee.
Good morning, I'm Fodisi Wekwele, a researcher for the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Ryoka Zmofilika. I'm in the Office of the Auditor General Parliamentary Office.
Someone just close the curtain down there. The sun is obstructing our view. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Yolanda Chet Brown. Sorry, I don't know about my writing surname on my head. Searching for the Silicon Channel Appropriations.
Good morning, I'm Lisa Landy. I'm from the Paul Vance Budget Office.
Good morning. Join Mashabela, committee support.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Michelle, I'm an economist with the Parliamentary Budget Office.
Good morning, Members. My name is Gail E. from Selwyn Parliamentary Office.
Good morning. My name is Marci Tiroi-Chineda, and I'm here from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Now we know who's who, and also a special welcome to the delegations from the Budget Parliamentary Budget Office. We will engage with them during the course of next week in terms of the appropriations, select committee on appropriations. DG, welcome again. You're the captain of this ship. The political captain is the minister. We know him very, very well. Work closely with Arthur Gordon in terms of finances. Over to you. You've got time until 11 o'clock to take us through your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, with abject humility, we would like to tender an apology to the committee for having submitted our documentation late. The committee did request that we should submit the information at least 3 days before. Our presentation was ready as early as Friday, but unfortunately we needed to get an indication from the minister as to whether he is okay with the contents thereof. So that has occasioned the delay in our submission of the documentation to you. We shall certainly endeavour to avoid the recurrence of this kind of mistake in the future. Thank you very much, Anderson. Having received an invitation to address the committee, we have prepared a presentation. The first part of it covers the mandate of COCTA. That will go through fairly quickly because, as we understand it, the committee's interest is more focused on the fiscal challenges facing municipalities. Part two of our presentation will then cover matters relating to the constitutional provisions that regulate that space. We will also cover matters relating to the equitable share, as well as the municipal infrastructure grant, which goes through the department. will also deal with matters relating to debt management, the challenges facing municipalities. Thereafter, we will focus on the support measures we've put in place to assist municipalities to overcome the fiscal challenges which we will outline in this presentation. And thereafter, Chairperson, we will then field whatever questions members of the committee will have. The Chief Operations Officer of the Department, Dr. Sbeho, will speak to those slides focusing on the mandate. And thereafter, our resident general, Sikidi, will then focus on the intergovernmental fiscal assets, if you will allow us. Thank you, sir.
Proceed, please.
Thank you very much, once more, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members of the Committee. I'll just quickly go through the mandate of the department, starting on slide number 3, on the constitutional foundations of COCTA's mandate. The Ministry COCTA is made up of two departments, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. In terms of its constitutional foundations, the elements include, amongst others, the prescripts of Chapter 3 of the Constitution in terms of the system of cooperative governance, the Chapter 2 in terms of the Bill of Rights, Chapter 6 in terms of the provinces, and Chapter 7 in terms of local government, as well as Chapter 12 with respect to the traditional leadership. The system of cooperative governance, as described in Chapter 3, particularly Section 441 of the Constitution, constitute or point us to the fact that the government is constituted in national, provincial, and local sphere, which are distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. The collaboration between these spheres of government therefore becomes very crucial for government to deliver, and particularly for COCTA to deliver on its mandate. Section 42 in particular enjoins all these spheres of government to observe and adhere to the principles of cooperative government and intergovernmental relations as set out in Section 41. Chapter 7, Section 1511 provides for the establishment of municipalities for the whole of the territory of the Republic. This particularly speaks to the wall-to-wall nature of municipalities in the Republic. The national sphere and the provincial spheres are obliged through Section 154, as you rightfully pointed out earlier on, Chairperson, to particularly support municipalities to make sure that they are able to manage their affairs and to exercise their powers and to perform their functions. The mandate of the Department of Traditional Affairs in particular, which departs from the Chapter 12 of the Constitution, Section 211 and Section 212 stipulates directly what are the role and status of traditional leadership, as well as the legislative provisions for the role of traditional leadership as an institution at local level on matters affecting local communities. On Section 30 of the Constitution speaks to the issues of language and culture and the extent to which that is covered by the Bill of Rights. Section 31 of the Constitution speaks further to cultural as well as religious and linguistic communities and the extent to which the people of the country of South Africa have to enjoy that, whatever cultural, religious or linguistic an inclination they would have as part of the Bill of Rights. Going further on with the mandate of COCTA, particularly departing from the fact that we just made mention of the fact that in terms of the Constitution, the municipalities are what we all, and therefore everything happens in a municipality, and hence we see the local government sphere as being at the coalface of the service of service to the citizens. The Constitution quite clearly defines and describes the Republic as one that is sovereign, democratic, state-funded, and among others, the values that that we have in our constitution, the human dignity, and the entire package of the Bill of Rights reaffirms the democratic values of human dignity, equality, and freedom. The Bill of Rights provides everyone with, among others, the right to human dignity and an environment that is not harmful to their health and well-being, and access to water and adequate and adequate housing. Basically, honourable members, we are saying here that the municipalities are the platform at which the state would demonstrate its respect for the protection and fulfillment of the Bill of Rights for all the citizens. Both departments have got what we can refer to as primary legislation that guides and direct the way in which the mandate is being executed. And the list goes with the Department of Cooperative Governance. You have got your Municipal Property Rights Act. You've got your Intergovernmental Relations Framework, your local government municipal structures, your local government municipal systems act, as well as your local government municipal finance act. And basically, with respect to the Department of Traditional Affairs, the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act and the National House of Traditional Leaders Act are the basic or the primary, the fundamental pieces of legislation governing the department. Finally, Chair, just to say that we COFTA is a as a ministry operating together between both the two departments has got the following the tenets of its primary mandates. One is the development and monitoring of implementation of national policy and legislation, seeking to transform and strengthen key institutions and mechanisms of governance to fulfill their developmental role. The second one being the development and promotion as well as monitoring mechanisms, systems and structures to enable integrated service delivery and implementation within government. This we take as being very fundamental, departing from the fact that you have got wall-to-wall municipalities. Therefore, whatever any sphere of government or any department is doing in the municipality would need to be done in an integrated way to make sure that there is a collaboration in delivery to citizens. The third one is the promotion of sustainable development by providing support to and oversight over both provincial and local government. In terms of the mandate, that is what we submit to your house. Thank you.
Chair, if I have to proceed with the second part of the presentation, I would want us to start with slide number 11. Where we are just seeking to provide a summary of the investments that flow directly and indirectly to municipalities. But I've done that aggregated per province. The reason why we aggregated it per province, we were of the view that we will be engaging with the committee for the next 5 years. And we will be able to present specifically on the MIG that we are currently administering. We will also be able to present on the debt that is owed to municipalities, and we will also be presenting on issues of audit outcomes. Now, we will also seek to provide some of the challenges experienced in the implementation of the fiscal instruments that we administer and how these are mitigated through MISA. We look at the debt owed to municipalities by households, business, government, and others, aggregated by province as well. Chair, I need to be advised in terms of providing the summary of the audit outcomes for the last 4 years. Realizing that the Auditor General is here, we might be repeating some of the things. The last issue was I didn't want to talk about the audit outcomes for 2013. Financial year, because as we met with the Auditor General last week, they are going to be releasing the report for the 30th of July. Now, in terms of the constitutional provisions, Section 214 provides for the equitable shares and allocations of revenues that are raised nationally. These revenues are shared or distributed conditionally or unconditionally through the Division of Revenue Act, which is passed annually. 2271 provides for the entitlement of provinces and local government to the equitable share of national raised revenue. I need to point out, Chair, that even though the provinces and local government are entitled to this revenue, Section 216 also provides some conditionalities so that they spend this money accordingly. This is done to enable it to provide basic services and perform functions that are allocated to them. Section 227B further provides for allocations that may be received from national government revenue, either conditionally or unconditionally, in which case the department is transferring the local government equitable share, which is not conditional, and also the municipal infrastructure grant, which is conditional. Those sections that I've mentioned before are actually found in Chapter 18 of the Constitution. What is important is that those guiding principles of intergovernmental financial matters include issues of treasury control, equitable division between the three spheres of government, in line with the powers that the provinces and local government are having. The intergovernmental fiscal system in the country has been in place now for the past 18 years. It must, however, be mentioned that the current system allocates almost 9% of the nationally raised revenue to local government, and around 90% is shared between national government and provincial government. Some commentators are of the view that the system has matured and needs minor adjustment to address some of its rigidities. But some are of the view that the system will need to be reviewed. And there are quite a number of people who are thinking about that, especially the very people that are at the local government here, because they say if you are only getting 9%, we know that the municipalities have got instruments to raise revenue other than provinces. So they are of the view that this system needs to be looked at differently. There are some principles that guide the intergovernmental fiscal system. One of the principles is that the system should be consistent with the Constitution. It should be clear, and it should be stable. And I think the mere fact that the Division of Revenue provides for medium-term expenditure framework allocation is to make it a point that the planning environment within the spheres is done with the sole purpose of saying what is it that we will need to be delivering in the next 3 years. The system should be implementable and administratively practical, and powers and functions will be aligned to expenditure responsibilities. The system also allows for ease of regulation and oversight, and the provision must be given to essential or basic services. Now, the next slide is just a broad overview in terms of the grants that are flowing directly or indirectly at the municipal space, which gives you the total amount of grants that are conditional that goes into that space. Now, if you look at the medium-term expenditure framework, we have plus minus 180 billion that flows to municipalities conditionally, which might also beg the question as to how many conditions are there that municipalities have to adhere to in terms of implementing some of the priorities of national government. Of interest, perhaps, Chair, will be your municipal infrastructure grant, which is the highest. For this financial year, it is standing at 14.6 billion. Next slide. Now, in terms of the equitable share, you have, within the medium-term expenditure framework, 239 billion that is flowing to municipalities. And if you look at the way in which it is distributed among provinces, you will see that KZN receives the highest. And it is because of the formula that is currently utilized, because it goes very much with the population dynamics of a particular area. There are certain elements within the formula which have not yet been activated. For instance, if we take the Northern Cape, if you only look at the population dynamics and you don't look at the settlement patterns, the cost per service in the Northern Cape is not the same as the cost per service in Gauteng. And therefore, the equitable share formula is going to be tweaked in a way that even those provinces that have settlement patterns and populations that are not that much to be catered for. Next. Now, this slide is just providing for the grant that we are administering, which is the Municipal Infrastructure Grant. And over the MTF, this grant is going to be 45 billion and is flowing not to all the municipalities but to 246 municipalities in the country. Next. In this slide, we are just providing an indication of the revenue that municipalities are supposed to be deriving from their trading services, like your municipal property rates, your electricity, water, your waste management issues, and your refuse removal, as well as other avenues that they have. Now, for the 2015 financial years, these are the figures that we have extrapolated from the budgets of various municipalities. You'll note that the total, if that total is going to be corrected, 211 billion. And if you add 211 billion and the 229 billion from the equitable share, it gives you the total pot that goes into the municipal space. Next. This next slide is almost the same as the previous one, but only for the 15-16 financial year. Next. Now, on this slide, Chair, we are trying to compare own revenues that are generated by municipalities and the transfers that come from national government. Now, if you look on the right from B4 to C2, you are able to make a conclusion that municipalities that are in rural areas as well as districts are dependent on transfers, because if you look at the C2, for instance, those are districts which have got a authority to render water sanitation functions. Now, they are dependent on the transfers, 75% of it, but the C1s are those that do not have the authority. They are dependent on 77%. But if you look at the metros, which is the A, you'll find that they only receive 17% of transfers, and the rest they raise on their own. The B1s as well as your secondary cities, and your B3 are those the local municipalities that are aspiring to be your secondary cities, and the secondary cities are aspiring to be your metros. Now, the next three slides will just be looking at the MIG in the last four financial years and the performance that the MIG has had. Generally, if we look at the 9-10 financial years, you realize that the aggregate expenditure was 89.4%. And the amount or the balance that was spent was 926 million. Now, in municipal terms, that 926 million is a lot of money. I'll talk to some of the challenges that we have observed in the implementation of MIG. and the next financial year, which was 2011, the expenditure was standing at 86%, and the balance that was unspent was 1.378 billion. The next slide, on 11-12, the expenditure was at 80%, and in 12-13, the expenditure has been 81.5%. Now, if you look at the quantum of the increase in the MIG, you realize that for each and every year, there is almost an increase of not less than 2 billion, which might also necessitate that perhaps we have not necessarily upscaled the capacity within the local government environment for them to be able to absorb that amount of money. Now, with regard to the 2013-14, as at the end of May, the expenditure patterns were at 75.7%. Normally, we should be having at the end of this week all the figures for the end of June, which will constitute the end of the financial year, and we'll be able to share with the committee in terms of the matters that relate to MIG expenditure. Now, on the next slide is just a summary of what you have seen in the previous slide, where we are saying the MIG expenditure over the past four financial years has been always been above 80%. And the MIG allocation quantum has been increasing over the years, and the balance transfer has also been an issue of concern. Now, there were quite a number of support initiatives that has been looked at in the past. We had the Sienza Manje, which was introduced to support municipalities, and we have also looked at challenges that are contributing to under expenditure, which will be outlined in the slide below. The establishment of a special purpose vehicle to support municipalities to spend on their infrastructure was looked at around 2009 and culminated in the establishment of a MESA. Now, with regard to the MIG challenges, which were further confirmed by the diagnosis that has been confirmed by MESA, was in many instances the lack of municipal readiness to address extension of basic services to areas where there are no services, especially with regards to project prioritization and registration. A lack of information regarding basic services backlogs toward stroke village in targeted municipalities, and non-functional water schemes resulting to inconsistent water supply. There were also issues around outdated sector plans to direct future MIG and other funds to areas of high priorities. The other area that we have identified is the poor project preparation and packaging to achieve efficiency and the attraction of alternative funding. I think I might expand a little bit on the issue around the poor project preparation. Most of the time you'll find that there's no alignment between the projects that are run by sector departments. For instance, you find that the Department of Water Affairs is delivering bulk in a particular area, and the municipalities are retributing in an area where there's no bulk, which results in infrastructure being rolled out in areas where there won't be any functionality because there won't be any source to really make the reticulated infrastructure to function properly. There is also issues of lack of contract and project management skills in municipalities, poor financial management, which threaten the sustainability and viability of most municipalities, and poor supply chain management processes, which are also indicated in the audit outcomes report. And then the issue around infrastructure asset management practices, especially the issues around Class 17 registers. Chair, I need to indicate that slide that in quite a number of municipalities, you find that the assets that might have been transferred to these municipalities, you don't necessarily have a credible asset register to indicate where this infrastructure is buried. Now, we also have ways that water treatment works that are overloaded and require refurbishment, and there is also an urgent need for road classification. In quite a number of municipalities, and I think even at the national government level, some of the sectors were not necessarily supporting municipalities, especially with regard to road classification, because when you go to a municipal space, you might not necessarily know whether this road is a provincial road or national road or a local road. The issues around landfill sites that are not licensed, municipalities requiring assistance with development of operations and maintenance plans, high water and electricity losses due to illegal connections, vandalism of infrastructure assets, and problematic billing systems. I think those are, if you look at the last bullet point, is what we have been seeing in the media. Even the municipalities that are metros, for instance, you find that some of their infrastructure is being vandalized, and then it has a disturbance on the services. If Chair could allow me to skip this slide and go to slide number 28. Having identified those particular challenges, we then said, what then becomes the role of MISA that is attached to the department? Which role was to say, how do you support these municipalities that are underspending, having identified those challenges? Then we said MISA should therefore support municipalities to conduct effective infrastructure planning and also support to assist with the delivery of infrastructure in municipalities, and also look at issues of operations and maintenance, and then build the capacity of municipalities to undertake effective planning, delivery, operations, and management of municipal infrastructure. If I can just talk a little bit about infrastructure planning, Chair, we find that in the municipal space, you do have the integrated development plan, which is sort of a strategic plan for the 5 years. And in terms of funding, you have your medium-term expenditure finances. The processes of planning should be able to indicate that in the next 5 years, you are going to be rolling out the following projects. And therefore, it does not make any sense why municipalities cannot advertise for planning and designs in the first year, because they already have a view of what the finances would be in terms of what is in the division of revenue. So MISA has come in to say, how do we assist municipalities when they have to align their infrastructure plan with their financial plans, so that some of the challenges that we have talked about are mitigated. Currently, through MISA, support has been provided to 121 municipalities in the country, and of this, a total of 92 are from the 108 municipalities that were approved by cabinet, and an additional 29 identified by provinces themselves. We have 69 technical consultants across the municipalities, and 63 of which are allocated within provinces, because we also want provinces to be having that capacity to really monitor and support the municipalities. There is a total of 33 PSPs that are currently supporting 92 municipalities on various areas of infrastructure planning, development, and management. We have also noticed that there are a number of interdependencies that require attention for municipalities to be able to be effectively spent. Issues like skills, governance aspects relating to proper oversight, as well as recruitment processes. I think those interdependencies show that it is not just a question of deploying a particular skill in municipal space. The municipal environment itself must be conducive to receive that kind of support. Otherwise, the support does not necessarily become effective. So for the next four slides is just an indication, four or five slides is just an indication of how we have been supporting various provinces through MISA to mitigate the challenges that I've mentioned. And if Chair agrees, I'll move to slide number 30,
slide number 36, just in summary, the aggregate municipal consumer debt is standing at 93.4 billion as of the 31st of March 2014. This is money that municipalities are unable to collect. And it is more than the 93.3 billion that we reported at the end of December last year. So there has been an increase of 0.1 billion on debt that is owed to municipalities. And government's share of the outstanding debt represents 4.3% or 4.1 billion. The 4.1 billion might look, and the percentage might look immaterial, but if you look at 4.1 billion, if you give it to municipalities that are in B4, there could be quite a lot of change that is realized. The largest component relates to households, which accounts for 61.5% or 57.5 billion, followed by commercial or business for 20.7% or 90.3 billion, and the other category of debtors for 30.4%, which goes to 12.5 billion. The next slide is just indicating the distribution of that debt in terms of provinces. And if you look at between 0 and 30 days, we have 12 billion. That is the debt that is still collectible. Between 31 and 60 days is 4 billion, and between 61 and 90 days is 3 billion. And the one that is worrying is, or worrisome, is the one that is over 90 days, because then the question of it being collected, except if it is a municipal rate debt, because a municipal rate debt, you can't really do much about it. You still have to remain with it for a period of 30 days. So that is the breakdown of that 93.4 billion that is owed to municipalities. Perhaps what is important to note is that you realize that housing is having the highest, 40 billion, and KZN follow with 10 billion, and then Western Cape with Free State and Western Cape around 8 billion. Now, sir, on the issue of the Operation Clean Audit, which really the AG is going to present on how municipalities are either presenting their annual financial statements, I just need to indicate that in 2009, we had a particular vision that quite a number of municipalities must achieve an audit, unqualified audit opinion with no findings. But wanted to indicate in terms, I think I will go to the data currently in slide 41. The latest audit outcomes for local government that have been released by the Auditor General pertain to the 11-12 financial year. Like I said earlier, that the AG is finalizing the 12-13 outcomes, which will be released later at the end of this month. The 11-12 outcomes reflect that 48% of municipalities and municipal entities achieved unqualified opinions against the 75% target of 2013. In addition, the adverse audit opinions and disclaimers have not been eliminated as we had anticipated. Only 3 provinces have managed to reach the 75% target for the 2013, and those are Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape, in the percentage that I mentioned respectively. Now, the last slide is just a question of giving a comparison between 2008-2009 up to 11-12 financial years, whether there has been some improvement or some regression in terms of the various audit outcomes and opinions. Now, what we have done as a department, slide 43, is we have come up with a support plan. I don't need to go through all the elements of the support plan, but just to indicate that the way in which we have done the plan, we have done a national plan, and that plan has been broken down into provincial plans. So each and every province has an audit outcome committee that is comprised of the provincial treasury, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in that province, and they monitor and support municipalities in addressing all the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. Thank you, Chair.
DG, are you done? Your team? You want to add anything?
No, Chairperson, that concludes our presentation, except to say that there is a spelling error which escaped my notice, which has a significant implication. On slide number 24, that last bullet, what is referred to as mooted, conveys a different meaning from what was intended. It is mooted, M-O-O-T-E-D. The difference is rather important. Thank you very much, Travis.
Thank you for that correction. Thank you for the presentation. Honourable members, this is a mouthful. I'm going to give time for questions that we take AG after this deliberation. There was discussions, DG, on the role and functions of district municipalities. We're picking this up in our provinces, specific myself in my province, Northern Cape, where we get the question. These discussions were started prior to the elections, and then we had the elections, and I think you must just inform the committee, where are we now? Also in relation to the fiscal position addressed by FFC in local government municipalities. It's a serious concern if you look at the spending of the migrant in the Northern Cape. It's down to 60%. And we will have to call that MEC for COP. It's a serious concern. Effective planning, if you look at the division of revenue at the back from page 217, you see the allocations that's allocated money, funding allocated to municipalities over a 3-year cycle. As our guys here today, we met with them yesterday in the Select Committee for Preparations, that municipalities, the leadership, management must be trained to plan in a 3-year cycle. Because when you speak to MM, he said, but Chief, you're going to get us in 3 years. It's news to them. They haven't read the Division of Revenue Act. It's lying there on the desk. That's the reality that is happening. The other point that our government share of outstanding debtors is 4.1 billion rand. If the department can give us a breakdown, the province, we are representing provinces as we sit here, which departments owe municipalities what in the Free State, Northern Cape, all 9 of them, that we can zoom into it, because we're going to in a constituency period, a provincial week period, etc., that we address this as part of our responsibility, seeing that we have a provincial mandate. On the members' questions, I'm going down here. We recognize the presence of Ongo Moai, chairperson of the Select Committee for Appropriations. Welcome. We recognize Mr. Plaigi. You are now again with the minister in the new department. Welcome. Mr. Plaigi is the parliamentary liaison of, official between the ministry and parliament. I think we've covered everyone else. I've noted Mr. Brandes, Monju, and someone else down the line, Matara, or Matara, in that sequence. Start, please.
Thank you, Chair. On your slide 37, I just want to get some more background on that slide. I just want to thank you for your presentation. It was very interesting. On this slide, I see that the debtor's age analysis by province, that the Western Cape is second highest, 0 to 30 days. That means that they've got a lot of debtors. So they are putting out the bills to the to the people who owe their money. And it looks bad against the other provinces look bad against that, because we're not the same biggest province, I don't think so. So then, if you can give me some background on that, please. What is your interpretation from your side? That could help me. Thank you.
No more, Matara.
Thanks, Shane. I need that question, but a comment, just to say that both the Select Committee on Finance will be working with POC on an ongoing basis. And this was just to introduce the department's mandate and the relationship between the department and the Select Committee going forward. And that on an ongoing basis, where we would need to reflect on whatever you've presented today in detail, that we will, as we move forward, then address those specific key areas in detail. Thanks.
Well, Councillor Monju.
Chairperson, Honourable Members, thank you very much. Chair, my question is around pages 18 and 19, municipal debtors, you know, the one you alluded to as well. You know, for municipalities, you know, to be owed 93.3 billion, there is no way then you won't have, you know, all these protests or whatever it is, because, you know, such amounts being owed to them would definitely hinder them not to go sort of function, you know, to the uttermost. Again, you know, if you look at page 19, it sort of gives you the breakdown per province, but it does not zoom down to say which department in the province is sort of owing so much money to municipality. So I just echo that we need, you know, a breakdown to say, so that at least, you know, people can focus on what is going on, because it is very general. Otherwise, you know, the information is greatly appreciated. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Lini?
Okay, thanks, Chair. It has the last part of the amount being owed municipalities. Is the other one which, you know, I wanted to emphasize on. Unfortunately, he has already, you know, part that one, because one other thing on the very same issue, I just want to know, what is the department doing? You know, because you see, sometimes we cannot, you know, wait for this kind of reports on a year-to-year basis, that municipalities are being owned this much. And what have you done so far? I mean, as a department, to show that you are doing something. Because next year you are going to report 100 billion. You know, yeah, after next, 115 billion, but nothing is being done. Can you at least just try and come out clear as to what are you doing? If there's anything that you have already, you know, maybe done with regard to this issue, at least come out in the open so that we can know this is actually, you know, happening. And number two, I see, you know, this beautiful presentation when it comes to this beautiful budget. I see, you'll correct me if I may not, you know, maybe if I happen to be out of order. But I see one other section which has got them, when we talk of budget, they feature the most in, you know, your budget, the CDW personnel. I just want to know if, because it's like those are general workers who assist in various departments. I read in one of the journals previously that they are being paid their salaries. It's about more than, you know, 15 million, if, you know, I can recall well. But you see, that personnel is just, you know, going to waste, as
sometimes, I don't know if maybe there may not be proper monitoring and maybe evaluation. Because you hear them, this year, they are said to be under Department X. And then the following year, they are going to be shifted to Department X, where they are going to be disowned. And then it ends up with them, you know, just, you know, wondering about not knowing what to do. I just want to know if maybe these are selling in your department, and let us also know if maybe there are plans to make sure that, you know, they feature the most in terms of assisting world transplants, you know, speeding up this, you know, service delivery issues. I think I'll end here. Thank you.
I just want to sensitize honorable members. There is a provincial week coming up, if I'm correct, in September or October, where we will also engage in our provinces with the provincial department of COPPA. And that's the question the honorable member must put on the table in that province as well.
No, thanks, Chair. Local government is something very close to my heart. May I start maybe acknowledging the fact that this was a very comprehensive report that we have received. It's most welcome. However, I must state that when the submission of documents, despite the fact that the DPG has given a reason to date submission of documents, I just want to emphasize that when documents are given to us timely, it gives us an opportunity to internalize them so that we have maximum participation in meetings of this nature. And I don't think that we will have this recurring in the future. I may be have listened to the presentation quite well, and I see something missing. You are the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and I noticed that the one area that was missing was the presentation of traditional affairs, and I'm not sure if there is going to be anything that would be presented. I'm saying this in Chairperson because the province where I come from, the Northwest, has traditional leaders, and I know that they are very serious challenges in terms of despite the fact that you have the committee set up that deals with disputes. To what extent is HOCTA interacting to ensure that there is a speedy, you know, resolution of such disputes? Chairperson, the other comment that I have is with regard to the interventions that COGA is doing in municipalities. It relates to your Section 139 ABC and Section 154 of your interventions. That more often than not, immediately after the intervention, be it in the UN or capital that you make, is there no way that you sustain that the municipality should be able to stand on its own after interventions? The next point that I want to make is with regard to the MID funding. If I'm not mistaken, these funds are transferred directly to municipalities and from national to municipalities. And there is a lot of problems with regard to spending. And this is multiple infrastructure grants, a very critical component that I think you were trying to address through MISA. And you have given us a diagnostic report. I was quick immediately to jump and say, what are the remedial actions? And I'm happy that you have alluded to them, though not specifically addressing all single challenges that were identified. I'm not sure to what extent, just emphasizing on what my colleagues have also alluded to, the fact that municipalities are owed such a lot of money, how do you expect them to render basic services? I know that in my province, there has been sporadic outspread of these protests. And part of the reasons is the financial status of the municipalities. Maybe out of interest, I want to know, the Northwest Department of Local Government is called Northwest Local Government and Traditional Affairs. It's not cooperative governance and COGA. Is there a special reason why they still refer to it as local government and traditional affairs? One of the greatest challenges that I know about municipalities was to give them address audit opinion was the issue that relates to underground infrastructure that has been there years, and you recall that we have now new entrance into local government. To what extent is not assisting municipalities, because that has a detrimental effect to the audit outcomes of municipalities. With regard to one area that people always talk about, local municipalities, and they say there is a problem with SLs, that the recruitment that you referred to, that's not the qualified and well-conversant personnel is recruited. In most cases, the national department and provincial department sit in this recruitment committees. They sit in panels, they decide 2 months down the line, the municipalities say, but this person is not the appropriate person. Is that not compromising your credibility with regard to the participation that we have in those committees? Thank you, Chair.
I want to make a remark regarding the questions when it comes to the finances of municipalities. That we will deal with that issue in the very near future, because we need the analysis from National Treasury also, not only from this department. The two goes together. So they might not be in a position to answer in detail now, but those interactions will come in the future. Just to emphasize the point on the Motaramat. Honourable Mohai.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just on two issues. The first one is on the intergovernmental fiscal system. There are slide 13, the last two bullet points. I missed the presentation on this, Chair, but maybe some elaboration or clarity will be helpful. If it can be explained, what does it mean to say some commentators are of the view that the system has matured and needs minor adjustment to address some of these rigidities? That's intergovernmental fiscal system that has got 18 years, and also the last bullet point points to a contradictory view on it. Is it because of shifting data or other things that are the qualitative development since 18 years we've had the system? And maybe the department says some commentators, maybe it's the department that was that raised the issue. I don't understand when you say some commentators are of the view. Maybe that's a diplomatic way of saying we need to revisit the system. The last one is on MIG. I think I note progress, also the significance of NISA. But the point I want to raise is Chair, on the issue that you have raised, that there should be discipline within departments with regard to planning. It's a non-negotiable. To achieve certain outcomes, you have to be consistent on a particular plan. So I want to link it with also that now it's no longer a discussion also that the country has said that NDP needs to be institutionalized. It's part of our guiding long-term plan. But the basis for long-term plans also is to inject this kind of a discipline. And to that extent, the president announced that there will be this Operation Pagisa. Was it Operation Pagisa? Yeah. Based on the new innovation, which was announced by the minister, I think it was Minister Hadebe, the president, when they said that South Africa is closely interacting with the planning system of Malaysia called Big Fast Results. and South Africa is going to work on the basis of that plan to understand that it was called Operation Pagis. Its significance really is more like a simplifying planning and also having the discipline of implementing what you planned. So I just want to know how far we're going in that regard.
Did you to yourself the Select Committee on Finance and other relevant committees were engaging in Limpopo regarding intervention in terms of Section 101B of the Constitution? Section 102C required of the Select Committee for Finance, as it was referred to that committee, to deal with the intervention. Section 103 refers to regulations to give direction in terms of the intervention. That was one of our findings when we engaged with the province on various occasions over 2 years. And the intervention is still on. It's not been lifted. How far is the department with the regulations giving directives for such an intervention? It was the intervention, the biggest in the history of this country of that magnitude, in 5 departments at the same time in 1 province. And it created some tension in the beginning when the intervention started. It's going a bit better, much better, but I think that there's a vacuum. Can you inform us how far are you? Because those regulations must also come to Parliament. You may respond. I'm going to give you 20 minutes to reply.
Jefferson, thank you very much indeed for very important questions that have been raised and very instructive comments as well. Jefferson, when we prepared for this sitting, we understood this to be a platform on the occasion of which we will be addressing specific matters relating to the fiscal challenges facing municipalities. Many of the questions that, not many, some of the questions that have been raised are focused on matters quite different.
If you can't answer now, you can reply in writing to the Secretariat and we will distribute the reply.
No, indeed. We will certainly attempt some of those now. But let me start with the last one, if that's shared, Chairperson, that matters relating to Section 100. At this point in time, there is a tug of war, for want of a better expression, between our department and the Department of Public Service and Administration as to who is responsible for the administration of Section 100. Because that is not clearly allocated in the Constitution to any specific ministry. So that can only happen by proclamation by the President. There is no dispute about who's responsible for Section 109 interventions. But as to who's responsible for Section 100, there is that ongoing debate. We do, however, have a bill in the offing which will be introduced into Parliament fairly soon. This bill is sponsored by our department, which seeks to elaborate on certain aspects of Section 100 as well as Section 139. In fact, if you look at the Constitution, Section 139 is more clearly set out, but Section 100 isn't. And we're trying to cover some of those shortcomings to make sure that there is better clarity. We are not at the stage where we can talk about regulation from our end relating to Section 100, as contemplated in Section 103, you said, Jefferson. Yes.
What we are bringing to Parliament is what we call the IMSI bill, intervention, intergovernmental monitoring, intervention and support. Let us listen to the relations, Chairperson, we can investigate, not unless my colleague, Mr. Sagidi, who is responsible for, or historically has been responsible for intergovernmental relations, can add something to that. Having dealt with the last question, Chairperson, perhaps I should move up a little bit and say that matters relating to slides 37, slides 18, 19, my colleague, Sagidi, will deal with. In fact, most of the questions of detail that have been posed will be specifically addressed by him. Honourable Member Mutashubin says that he was hoping to hear us give some detail on the Department of Traditional Affairs. In corporate governance and traditional affairs has got two departments. I know that often we are referred to as the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in many documents, but in fact there are two departments, one ministry. The Department of Traditional Affairs is not part of the delegation today.
That was the instruction you are coming to deal with local government.
Indeed.
That question actually resolves at the Select Committee for COFTA. And some of the members are serving there as well. So I'm just giving some clarity to you as to make your job easier to reply.
I mean, that's it to you, Chairperson. Matters relating to, which is also a question raised by Honourable Member Tashbin, relating to Section 139 interventions and 154 supports. These are matters we were in fact interacting with our portfolio committee on, the select committee of the NCOP yesterday. Had we known that the committee would be interested in that, we certainly would have made that available. And it's certainly a matter we can interact with the committee on in detail, if you should schedule a time. Because that in itself is a much more involved conversation. So we would be more than happy if you should invite us to come and share that with you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm unable to account for the province having chosen, taken the liberty to name a department in a particular way. Whether it be Northwest Local Government and Traditional Affairs, my colleague suggests Local Government and Human Settlements, that is a nomenclature that is not standard. In fact, in many other provinces, in fact, only Gauteng has got a department of COCTA. That was in the last term. I don't know whether it's still the case now. In some provinces, they're called COCTA because they also have a human settlement component. So the configuration is not standard. It's certainly a matter I am unable to account for, Jefferson.
We know that. Carry on.
Right. Thank you very much, Jefferson. Perhaps I should, at this point in time, ask Mr. Sagidi to field the specific questions of detail, and then I'll come back and pop up if there are any questions left for you to do so. Thank you, Chair.
You've got 11 minutes left. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, your question around the 4.1 billion, whether we could provide a breakdown per province, we will be able to provide a breakdown per province if we could get the details of the secretariat of the committee so that we can send information per province, per department that is owing a particular municipality in that province. We have that level of detail.
It's ZRento at parliament.gov.za.
I'll confer with him after the session, Chair. Honourable, I didn't get the name.
Want
Brandes.
Oh, von Brandes.
Yeah.
Okay. the issue of Western Cape owing 2.1 billion in the between 0 and 30 days. The interpretation of that is that the debt that is between 0 and 30 days, we call it current debt, and we are of the view that various municipalities will be able to collect that amount within that 30 days, because the 30 days period is the standard way in which you have to pay. So the total debt that is owed between 0 and 30 days, our view is that it's current debt that can be paid. It could be. I cannot really attest to that, but what I'm saying is that within the 30 days, we still have the view that they can collect everything, or they can collect 99% of it, because it's between 0 and 30 days. The only challenge is only when we talk about 90 and the above.
So just a follow-up here, please. I just want to confirm it, and that is, you know, because you've got two businesses. They've got, both of them have got debtors, but the billing department is very poor of the one, and the other one is, billing department is really well-oiled. And that's why I asked the question, is the Western Cape billing department of the local government really well? Because that shows you that 2.1 million.
Well, I'm unable to answer that question, Chair.
You see, Honourable Member, I can't give data now because it was not captured in the presentation. We can go back to the department and forward it to the Secretariat to circulate to members. Proceed, please.
In terms of the Honourable just directly in front of me, I didn't get his name as well. Oh, Honourable Mtiling. The question is, what is the department doing with regard to the government debt that is owed to municipalities? We have looked at the debt in two ways. There is debt that is called debt prior to the devolution, in which case we are looking at the bills from municipalities and try to clean them up for the Department of Public Work to pay. Then there is the part that is called the after the devolution, in which case each and every department has to be paid for its own services. In that respect, we have debt management committees in all the provinces. Routing, for instance, that said 2 weeks ago, to look at that. Now, what happens is that they will give us information in terms of this department, let's say Department of Health, is owing this particular municipality. We will write through the minister to the MEC or the minister in national government to say, give us reasons why you are not able to pay this particular debt. Around last year, we had that functioning very well, because we also allow MECs to come and present why they are unable to pay certain municipalities on various occasions, and that has been something that was very well functioning. There is, however, one bigger challenge where you find that the departments and the municipalities are contesting the bill themselves to say they don't believe that this is the bill that is authentic. So those are some of the challenges that we have observed. The other bigger challenge is around schools, because quite a number of schools, you find that the Department of Education is not even aware that that school is owing, and the school principals are unable to utilize the money that have been appropriated to the school to really serve that particular debt. So those are some of the challenges that we have observed, and the task team really goes deep and look at those matters. So we have a plan to really deal with that, because we meet on a quarterly basis. At a national level, it is
a committee that is run by the department, by our department, Treasury, Public Works, DPME, so that we even went to an extent to say if the bills are really authenticated, we could be able to go to Treasury and say, Treasury, are you able to pay directly to municipalities on the allocations that are supposed to be going to the municipalities? That option was not really an option that was taken. Also, we do have a challenge there. Now, with regard to the community development whereas personnel, Honorable Ntilini, this is a problem that is led by the Department of Public Service and Administration. We were participating in the sense that in terms of provincial allocation, some of them are in the Premier's office, like in the Free State, and some are in the Department of Local Government. So the I don't have the details of whether the community development workers are fully utilized or not fully utilized. The department that is best placed to respond, I think, will be the Department of Public Service and Administration. Honorable Mukashubing, with regard to the issues of underground infrastructure, I have mentioned in one of the slides when we were talking about the diagnosis, that when you go to a municipality, it is very difficult for a municipality to indicate where the assets are. The issues around asset register and Club 17, which has a direct impact on the audit outcomes of municipality. Some of those are infrastructure that is built underground. And I have mentioned, Honorable Chair, that when the transfers were happening, when water assets were transferring some of these assets, you find that the as-built plans were not there. So municipalities might not be able to indicate where this particular infrastructure is. If I may give a particular example, Honorable Chair, in a municipality called Makado, you had a situation where a staff member, when this staff member resigned and joined a private company, this person left with as-built plans such that the municipality would not even know what was happening in their infrastructure. Until such time that we realize that it looks like somebody has resigned and left with that kind of information. And what they were doing was not necessarily a legal issue, because they would just go and close a valve from one source to them, and then they go to the media and say there is no water in town. And then the municipality will run to them because they have a team contract with them. They just go and open a pipe, a valve, and then they put in an invoice for the municipality to pay. So those are some of the critical challenges that the minister is saying we need to go back to the basics and deal with the basics so that the basics are really right. Honorable Dibiak, on the issue that the DG has responded to on the integrated monitoring support and intervention bill, we have not necessarily developed any regulation, because we said we cannot start developing regulations when the bill is not yet through Parliament. So the regulations on intervening regarding Section 139 will only be developed after the bill has gone through Parliament and has been ascertained to by the President. Honorable Mohai, with regard to the issue of the intergovernmental fiscal system, whether the issue of commentators is the departmental issue or not, the issue is that the standard is that if you are implementing a particular system for 10 years, you need to review what this system is really bringing. Now, it is not necessarily within, because the intergovernmental system is between us and Treasury. We wanted to attempt to do a sort of a review, because if you look at municipalities are saying, if you are only allocating as 9% of national revenue for 18 years, it has always been less than 2%. are we really doing that? If you look at that slide where I had an indication of the dependency to transfer, is that the way we should be going, or should we be reviewing the system and say, in line with what the COO has presented in terms of municipalities being the area where service delivery has happened, can't we make local government receive more than provincial government, for instance? So those are some of the issues that are emanating from some of the studies that have been done by ourselves and Treasury, but also from SALGA's point of view, to say, as the voice of local government, we feel that the national raised revenue is not shared in a manner that we can say municipalities are able to really become sustainable in the long run. We might need to look at differentiating and say, for those who are B, A to B3, we may leave it at 9%, but for B4 and the C1 and C2, you may need to say, let's up the game and the percentage to be 20 or to be 21. So those are the things that I'm referring to. So the review has not yet been done. At the moment, the only review that is being done is the review on all the conditional grants that are flowing into municipalities. And that review will be finalized around October and presented to the budget committee, after which, depending on whether it would have been approved by the budget committee, then it will be incorporated into the division of revenue for the next financial year. The other comments that Honorable Mohai made with regard to Operation Pakisa, I thought the bill will handle that is beyond me.
DG, you can respond and wrap up. Thank you.
Indeed. I did suspect, Chairperson, that this one would be left for me to sit on. Chairperson, we thank you very much to Honorable Mohai for that question. We have recently presented to the Portfolio Committee as well as the Select Committee of the SOP our annual performance plan and our strategic plan, both of which are predicated on the National Development Plan as the overarching plan. The MTSF of government draws inspiration from the NDP and it seeks to give effect to it. Our strategic plan resonates very strongly with the intentions of the NDP. Of course, the National Development Plan is a long-term plan, but the MTSF is a five-year plan. What we have done is we have translated that into the five-year strategic plan of the department, and our annual performance plan, which we presented to the two committees I've referred to, seeks to annualize that plan, indicating how we are coming at achieving the plans we set ourselves in that strategic plan for the next 5 years. So all those matters are embodied therein. If the committee should wish to interact with us in detail on that, we would be more than happy to show where the linkages are, the plans that we are rolling out, and the National Development Plan. We certainly appreciate the instructive comments on the importance of discipline with regard to planning in order for us to realize the goals we have set ourselves. And certainly, that's what informs the approach we have to the work that we do. As members will definitely know, we have Minister Gordon at the helm of the ship, as somebody who's well reputed for having succeeded in doing major things in the past. Certainly, with him at the helm of this department, we believe that we shouldn't go wrong. We should be able to realize the objectives we've set ourselves. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Yes, the Honourable Minister is a qualified pharmacist, so he knows how to doctor patients. He got the name Mr. Fixit at the World Economic Forum in Davos in January, when he put the case of South Africa, referring to the NDP. Yes, thank you. There's overall appreciation for your presentation, DG, and for your team. also honoring this engagement. And we'll be definitely engaging you further in the next 5 years. Honourable members, we are all human. We could have a comfort break for 10 minutes. I want you back, please, a quarter to 12, that we take the AG. In terms of Auditor General's presentation, they will tell us what is the business. There will be other engagements in future. So we have to adjourn at 5 minutes to one. Thank you.
Thank you. All the members now please be seated that we can continue with 11:15. I'm very strict on time. When you go to the airport, the place not waiting for you, the dress leaves. Yeah. It's the same principle. Welcome the Auditor General's representatives here and look forward to your presentation but also to the engagements for the next 5 years. Please introduce yourself and the rest of your team that year. If there's anyone else here from the AG's office, and then you may proceed.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Sharon Adams. I'm currently the Acting Business Executive of the Western Cape Business Unit. And I've also got my colleague over here that will be assisting me.
Give you 25 minutes.
I've got a skinny cappuccino today, so you will see the presentation is not that long. I think what's important to know that our brief this morning is just to speak about our mandate and the type of audits that we do. We will further engage this committee, which I think will be an important engagement on the outcomes of the MMA audits for 12-13. We will speak about the outcomes, speak about the key areas that have an impact on municipalities, also speak about the key drivers of internal control, speak about the oversight function, and what are those key root causes that need to be addressed in the financial year going forward in order to improve the outcome. So that will be coming in some of the next sessions. So my presentation today is much focused on our mandate and what we do, Chairperson. Thank you so much. So if we go to the first slide, which speaks to our reputation promise, and I think this is important why we exist at our office, and I think the key one that normally stands out for me is on the last sentence, it says we're auditing to build public confidence, and I think that is one of the key reasons why we exist in office in terms of this constitutional mandate that we do have. In terms of the legislation requirements, the first one that we would like to highlight is in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And first of all, in terms of the Act, the accounting officers have a responsibility
to ensure proper record keeping and thereby preparing accurate and complete financial statements for audit. So these financial statements are submitted at a specific time during the financial year. Secondly, we are responsible to audit the financial statements as the auditor general. In terms of section 14.2 of the PFMA, it also says that we will audit the submitted financial statements by the accounting officer. So that is on a high level in terms of the work that we do. The same would also be applicable for municipalities which is depicted in the MFMA, what the key roles and responsibilities are. Further on, our mandate is further entrenched when it comes to the Constitution, where it indicates in terms of section 188 that we must audit and report on the accounts of the financial statements and the financial management of government institutions. So you can clearly see there from that we've got to audit the financial statements and the financial management system, which I will provide more detail in the presentation later. Further on, when we look at our Public Audit Act of 25 of 2004, Section 20, specifically say what the Auditor General must do in terms of an opinion and a conclusion. Now, the first part is when we look at the regularity audit, there's three areas that we look at. First of all, we give an opinion on the financial statements. So what is presented in the financial statements is the position statement, performance statement, a cash flow statement, budget reconciliation statement, notes to the financial statements, and based on that we indicate that the information disclosed in terms of the rand and cents, it's fairly represented. So it's not 100% assurance, we basically give reasonable assurance. The second area that we normally conclude on is compliance to laws and regulations, where we basically look at what are those key legislators that have legislation requirements that has an impact on departments and municipalities. Based on that, we've actually issued an Auditor General Directive that we issue on a yearly basis to say, for compliance to laws and regulations, this will be the 12 focus areas that we've been looking at. And for the past 3 to 5 years, we've been looking at exactly the same focus areas that ultimately have an impact on report. One of the key focus areas that we look at under compliance to laws and regulations is what we call the UIF, which is unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The other item that we always also report on is predetermined objectives, or also known as service delivery. Now, specifically when we look at this specific area, there is two criteria that we look at. The one criteria is the usefulness. So when we talk about usefulness, we say the user of when the user look at the annual report or at the strategic plan or at the IDP of a municipality, will they be able to use the information? First of all, we ask ourselves, is the information presented consistent? So as the municipality works, they work from the IDP document. From the IDP document, they do a service budget delivery implementation plan. From that plan, they do quarterly reports on a quarterly basis. From those quarterly reports, they produce an annual report. So then we say, for usefulness, is the information consistently presented, number one? Secondly, we also look at the relevance of the indicators. So when we look at the indicators that we selected, we say, is this relevant to the municipality's function? Are they not including indicators that's not relevant to their business? The third area that we normally look at, we look at the measurability of the indicators. So for example, if a municipality put a specific target down, will that target be measured? Is it clear? Is it based on the SMART principle? So if they indicate we will build 20 houses, is it clearly defined where those houses will be, in which street, in which area those houses will be? The last area on the usefulness that we look at is in terms of presentation, because in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, it's very clear what is the information that needs to be reported in the annual report. So we make sure that's compliance to those legislations. The second area when we look at predetermined objectives is reliability, where we basically look at the information that's presented. So from the annual report, the municipalities would indicate this is what we've targeted to do and this is our actual performance. So what we really do is to say the information that's presented, can we confirm it with evidence and source documents? So then we look at the reliability of information that's presented. So that is the key areas that we look at when it comes to the three areas that we normally audit. Our products at the AGSA, so we get the regularity audit, and we have went into quite detail in the previous slide. When we talk about regularity audit, those are the three areas that we look at: financial statements, appeal from a serial statement, secondly, there's no findings on compliance to laws and regulation, and findings on predetermined objectives. At our office, we also do performance audits, which is a discretionary audit. And these audits would normally relate to specifically where, for example, from an audit office we look at specific areas that would pose risk, and basically look at those areas across all departments or entities where we basically look at the economical efficiency and effectiveness. Now, for example, for municipalities, one of the performance audits that we've been looking at is just a performance audit on infrastructure, where we basically look is this is the resources effectively utilized, efficient, and in economical. So that's the discretionary audits that we normally do. We also have an investigation, and that is also discretionary. And basically, the key thing from our investigation units, they assist us as an office to identify any fraud-related risk in our audit. So based on specific audits that we are involved in, we would find a need for them to come and assist us with a risk assessment to identify specific risk relating to fraud and error in financial statements. Further on, they also conduct specific investigation based on requests that do come from our clients. The audit of predetermined objectives here, basically, we will provide assurance that the information presented is credible in terms of the performance of that specific institution. So I went into quite detail in explaining the specific criteria that we utilize. So you can go to the next slide. Now, in terms of the audit report that we do produce, when we're basically completing the auditing, and I think what's important to note, when we audit in terms of the specific framework and policies that's been adopted by a specific institution. So for municipalities, for example, the reporting framework that they utilize is the GRAP reporting framework, which is generally recognized accounting practices, and based on that framework, they need to comply with specific policies and procedures. Based on that, the financial statements is being submitted for us for audit purposes. We audit these financial statements, and then based on the audit that we do, there's different type of audit opinions that we do get. So the first one is the unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance or PDL. So this is where we say the financial statement that's presented to us is free from material statements, so it is a fair reflection of the business of the specific institution. The second opinion that we do it is a qualified audit opinion. Now, in this specific case, as auditors, we also work with what we call materiality. So when you look at a financial statement as a whole, we say, what is the tolerable error that as auditors we will be able to accept? And based on that, if something is above the tolerable error, we basically say, we cannot accept this error, the financial statement is materially mistaken. So when we get a qualified opinion, for example, there's various balances on your positions and performance statements, so it could be an indication that something like your account receivable is not appropriately stated. So, for example, how the policies were defined in terms of the preparation of the financial statements is not consistent of how the financial statements are prepared. And in that case, we would have a qualified opinion either. So there's two instances where we can qualify. There's a disagreement with management. Or secondly, there's a limitation of scope. But the limitation of scope is not so pervasive for us to go for the disclaimer of audit opinion. So that is qualified. So we're saying everything else in the financial statements fairly present except for that specific account balance where we're saying we say it's not a true reflection. Disclaimer of audit opinion, I think for us as auditors, that's the worst opinion that you can get as an institution, because by putting down a disclaimer of audit opinion, we basically say the financial statement that's presented here, we cannot give an opinion on that financial statement. And the main reason why disclaimer audit opinion exists is because there's not sufficient appropriate audit evidence that's provided for us to be able to give an opinion. So that's why we say when something is disclaimed, meaning there's certain transactions that management has entered into, but they don't have the proof or documentary evidence to say this is how we entered into the transaction and here are the proof. So that is really the disclaimer audit opinion. Okay. The adverse opinion here again is where there's a disagreement with management. For example, the accounting policy would stipulate they need to prepare, for example, for the provision of doubtful debt, they need to look at the risk profile of the client. But how they've done it, for example, is just looking at debtors over 90 days. So that is clearly disagreement what is in terms of the framework and what and how they basically prepare the financial statement. So an adverse opinion is one that is material, both material and its pervasive. So the amount that is disclosed, that's incorrect, is so significant that we basically give an adverse audit opinion. The one key thing that I just want to highlight, as part of our audit report also we do what's called emphasis of matter. Those emphasis of matter paragraph is normally where management has disclosed information in the financial statements and we're just highlighting it to the use of the financial statements. Those emphasis of matter has no impact on our opinion. I think key for the members to note when it comes to our general report and when it comes to the audit report, it's key to note the root causes that has been identified, because when there's a qualification or disclaimer, adverse opinion, or there's findings on predetermined objectives or find the non-compliance of the rules in regulation, we would normally contextualize what actually went wrong. And we normally split these areas in three areas. So one is leadership, because we say leadership is supposed to set the tone at the top, making sure there's the vacancies are filled, making sure the policies and procedures in place, making sure there's the action plans are followed up. Then we've got financial management and performance. And when I think of this example, I normally think of a car. The car, the outside of the car would be the leadership, the engine, and those parts would be the financial management performance information. Those people that make sure that the engine work on a continuous basis and they're petrol in the car, and they've got an important role to play in terms of the functioning. Then the last part that we normally contextualize if it's one of the root causes on governance, where we say in terms of governance, risk assessment processes is important also, and then also in terms of establishment of audit committees and internal audit as oversight, as the oversight function. So that's a key one that I just want to highlight there. The next slide deals with the oversight function and basically our interaction with this specific committee. The one thing that I want to indicate that just before I go into the detail of this, for this financial year, or we started last year, where we basically look at what is the oversight function of Parliament specifically. So let's see what we did. We went to the Constitution. So in terms of the Constitution, there's certain mandates that's in the Constitution. Based on those mandates that's in the Constitution, especially for Parliament, is legislature. So the first thing that we looked at to say, in terms of the Constitution, first thing, Parliament is supposed to make laws. That's the first thing. Secondly, Parliament is supposed to provide oversight. And then the third area we looked at was on public participation. Based on that, and the main reason why I'm raising that, because specifically when we look at the oversight responsibility, and I think this committee is probably one of those that will have the oversight responsibility, we specifically looked at when specific resolutions are passed by the committee and how vigorously those resolutions are followed up when those resolutions are passed in terms of oversight. And I think the key thing that I want to highlight in terms of this committee and probably other committees that we've started looking at is that in terms of the work method, in terms of what you do, from our side we will submit the reports as indicated in that task to Parliament for consideration. We then from our side would brief this committee in terms of the reports that we submitted. That the committee will then conduct public hearings, and specifically when we come to SOPA. Based on that, we will assist with any recommendation and insights that required from our side. And then ultimately, we will make sure that we follow up on any recommendations that's given by the committee. So that's just on a high level in terms of how we basically see the oversight function and what role we would play as an office in terms of this specific committee. The next slide that I've got, which is also a last slide, is just in terms of our service that we're offering to this committee. And I think it's important for us just to know we've just jotted down some of the things based on our experience in terms of the work of the committee, but it's important just to hear by the chairperson and the other members what additional things that you would like us to do. So we first one, we said we will do pre-briefing before the oversight visits. And specifically when it comes to the municipalities and the outcomes of the municipalities, briefing after the MFMA general report has been tabled, and this one will be tabled by the 30th of July, and soon thereafter we will then be available to provide the briefing on the outcomes. Briefing before the hearings for departments and municipal entities, and then lastly, roadshow after the MFMA cycle. So those are the key things that we've identified in terms of servicing this committee, so it's up to the members to indicate if there's any additional things to your person. Yes, any questions?
Thank you, Mrs. Adams, from the HS office, all the members. Are there any questions for clarity? It's very straightforward. very important, and in terms of Section 5 of the Money Bills Act, referring to the BRRR process, the NCOP is excluded in that process, and it's one of the things we have to address in the review of the Money Bills Act. Because when you do a review referring to the annual report, you're only not dealing only with the annual report in front of you, you must have a few years annual reports as well to get the trend, what happened in this department, to do an analysis, and that's where our research unit comes in and our content advisor to assist the committee and also the Parliamentary Budget Office, one of the main stakeholders. All the members' questions, starting here from the bottom to the top. You may start.
Chairperson, thank you. Now, my question to Mr. Sardas is based on the financial audit opinion. You know, that's like, that's like, when the president, presented, the State of the Nation address, he had about 11 municipalities in South Africa, approved 278, which have totally clean audits. Now, I don't see that slide which would be on top of the unqualified in your diagram. That's number one. So you need, to say why, because unqualified is something else altogether than clean audit. Chairperson, secondly, I thought that the disclaimer was worse off than the others, because it is where the AG says, I cannot formulate an opinion on this finding in this municipality. But there I'm saying that, address is sort of the worst off. I'm not very sure, but acting on clarity on those two things. Thanks, Sir President.
That's when the municipality is in ICU. Please proceed.
Thanks, Chair. Next time I'm not going to allow him to speak first, because he normally takes my points or my questions. Anyway, it seems to me the thinking capacity is in the same level. Thank you a lot. Ma'am, mine is very small. Most of the recommendations that you come up with when doing this audit, I just want you to give us the example of those recommendations. And if maybe there might have been actions in some of those, in the history where we have participated in this institution. And number two, what makes your institution not being able to obtain sufficient and appropriate? Is it because appropriate audit evidence, which results in the so-called disclaimer, is indicated? Normally, what causes that? And maybe lastly, normally when you actually carry out your activities, what do you normally come across, when you're doing all these audits in municipalities? Because I'm asking this question because, I've been with my chair, and also the other chair, Mr. Beard, they will agree with me. I might seem to be repeating one thing, but just because you are here for the first time, sir, and this is directed to you, we see this thing year in, year out. Audits are being carried out, and we get this, unqualifying and disclaimer and address. But what I want to know is that is there something happening? Because we cannot, manage to keep the very same officials who either, squander, taxpayers' money for no good reasons. But in the end of the audit, the very same people are still found remaining those positions. So I want to know, as the AG, what do you normally do, and what do you have in aim in the near future to work with that? Thank you.
Yeah, the AG's office doesn't appoint or fire people. Parliament's got the oversight role to play, as well as the portfolio committees and provincial legislators, where there's a scope. So there's a process to deal with that.
My name is very difficult.
Yeah, but you'll get used to it, colleagues. No, thanks, Chair. Mine is just for information sake. I'm aware that you in the past were auditing finances. And lately, if not last day, you were auditing performance information. I'm sure that is what you refer to as predetermined objectives. Now, when you audit information, performance information, are you auditing English? Are you auditing target, indicators, or achievements? Because what I have realized is that more often you argue about gaps in an indicator, you argue about two functions in one indicator, and in the process we say people have set targets, they have achieved, underachieved or overachieved. What is it that actually when a person has overachieved has to give a reason? Are you following what I'm trying to say? To understand actually what, so that we are able to help municipalities, because part of the role, I think, of the AG's office is to monitor and support. Thank you.
Thanks. I think we have had a very good relationship with the Office of the Auditor General. And in fact, let me say, in the first term of the Office of the Auditor General, in London, Mr. Nombembe, it has really improved its profile and image in South Africa so much that it is an institution that has been much more received to play its constitutional obligation. And I hope that process will continue under the new leadership of the new Auditor General in the country. There were commendable things of reaching out door to doors and group shows that were conducted. So I'm just saying that really that we have had a good and placed hopefully a foundation that will have much more vigorous engagement with the Office of the Auditor General, because what distinguishes this office should be its ability to consistently tell things as they are and to help us to execute our mandate as this finance committee. Thanks.
Hmm. Well, 100% correct, Honorable Mohai. Actually, through their reports, highlights what is right and what is wrong in terms of that department or municipality referring to the legislation. It's up to us in Parliament to take it further. I can't do it. It's us. That's what Mr. Nombembe said when he made his farewell speech. It's up to Parliament to take those actions further. To improve on audit reports, to get good governance and sound financial management. And to have that, you have to have competent people in the correct positions. Thing isn't locked. It stands here. It's the State of the Nation address by the President of this country. And we've got a good international standing as the Office of Auditor General globally. So we've got something to be proud of. You may reply.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Honourable Member, thank you so much for those questions. The first question is dealing with the audit opinion and why we haven't included clean audits there. So it's something that we need to include, because a clean audit is basically when unqualified and you have no findings on compliance and no findings on predetermined objectives. And rightfully, as the Honourable Member was saying, the President did mention those 11 municipalities in the prior year that received that clean audit status, which was commendable. The second question that just deals with the disclaimer and the adverse opinion, and maybe it should maybe the way the slide is following, because the worst one is the disclaimer of audit opinion, where we actually cannot give an opinion on the financial statement. So it's maybe just the sequence of the slides that it is. But definitely from an audit perspective, the worst one is a disclaimer of audit opinion. The next question one of the members asked is just what happens to our recommendation when we give those recommendations. And I think what's important to know is it's management prerogative to implement that recommendation. One of the key things that we've reported last year, also as part of our general report, is to say there's slow response from management to implement recommendations and looking at the root causes for the outcome.
So that's one of the things that when we look at the internal control deficiencies that we normally follow up and basically report on that with those action plans that management has implemented. So it's quite important when those action plans are devised or developed that it, number one, properly address the root causes so that findings doesn't reoccur or new findings in the same area occur. And secondly, that officials are held accountable, so clear task is given to officials who must do what, and smaller milestones are there, because a lot of time what happens, those recommendations are taken up in the action plan, but all those times is for 30th of June. So come 30th of June, a lot of times it's too late, but if smaller milestones is then put for those recommendations and how it will be implemented, that will actually go a far way. The other question relating to what do we basically mean when we're saying that we don't get appropriate audit evidence. And just to get an example, so what's important that the information that's disclosed in the financial statement, so being on asset management, so if a balance for assets shows we've got 2 billion assets for the year. As an auditor, I need to confirm 2 billion assets is that the true reflection. So the type of work that I will do, first of all, I will say, is 2 billion assets disclosed? Can I actually confirm by looking at source information back to the physical assets? So that is what we call existence of assets. So I would go from the asset register back to the source or completed, going from the source, so going from here, from the debt, back to the asset register. What's important in cases when we say there's not appropriate sufficient evidence is, for example, where there's no asset register in existence. So, for example, we don't know the municipality doesn't have a right type of the complete asset register. They don't know where their assets are, not safeguarded. And the other area is that, for example, bought assets for the year under review, but they've got no documentary proof. So a supplier was, say, 20 million for an asset, but there's no invoice to say, we received this good and here's the invoice and the good has been delivered. So that's when we talk about that we don't have sufficient evidence to able to confirm that the asset balance at year end isn't appropriate to those. The biggest challenge for the municipalities, I think, in a number of provinces, and I mean, and it has been mentioned here by COCTA, specifically relates to infrastructure assets. And specifically when you look at qualification areas, that is where a lot of qualification comes because of those infrastructure assets that's not properly recorded in the asset register and properly accounted for, ultimately. From our office, I think we did have engagements with National Treasury because, for example, they get funding to assist municipalities. So we say, rather focus the funding to say, let's first look at asset management and how we can resolve the issues of asset management across the country instead of just giving the money haphazardly when it comes to assisting municipalities. The other thing that I would just like to mention is just in terms of the root causes that were also identified last year. One of the three key root causes that we think is that not going right, the first one is to say, slow response from the leadership to implement the findings. Secondly, we say there's poor consequence management or lack of consequence management for transgression. So if I'm an official in supply chain management and I didn't do what I'm supposed to do, nothing happens to me. I'm there the next year and the next year and the next year. A lot of times what will happen, if I do something wrong with this municipality and I'm found guilty of a misconduct, I just go to the next municipality. So there's no recourse. And then at the next municipality, I do the same thing ultimately. The third root cause that we've identified, we said there's two positions as vacancies. I think at one point, I can't remember which one, where most of the people was acting CFOs because there is a skills shortage. And we're saying the officials that in the position either has lacking of appropriate competencies to do the job. So those are the three key root causes that we've identified that has an impact on the fines. The last question specifically that relates to predetermined objectives, and I think this is an area as an office since 2004-05 we started looking at to say when we look at service delivery, because I think what's important for any person was probably is not to say somebody had an unqualified report. What does that mean to my grandmother, to the person in the public out there? They want to know in the morning when they get up, can they switch off their lights? Is the robot functioning? Can they flush the toilet? And those are the key things. And as a result, we started with starting to look at predetermined objectives or the audit of performance information. And I think what's key to know is to say, when we specifically as municipalities, we look at targets. So we will basically look at how the objectives that we set, those objectives would lead to targets. What's important for any person in reading that target, that person must be able to understand what that target means. Secondly, you might be able to re-perform the work. A lot of this is what municipality does, just in general, when they set their targets, they base their targets on budget. So they will say, I need to, for spending, percentage of spending on housing would be this percentage of budgeting. So that is not really a true reflection of the service delivery part, because the service delivery part would be the completion of houses. So a lot of time where the root causes comes is, what we find a lot of times when it comes to predetermined objectives, the structure, how the structure operates is not effective. So the person in charge of predetermined objectives doesn't, for example, report to the municipal manager. Or it's the case that there's not enough officials working with predetermined objectives within the municipal environment. The second thing, the other thing that always goes wrong, a lot of times municipalities have a bottom-up approach. So they would look at what is in the scorecard of the Section 57 directive and try to escalate it up to do an IDP. Instead of having top-down approach, so we need to start from an IDP document. That should inform our budget. That should inform our SDBIP. That should inform how we report on a quarterly basis, ultimately. So those are the key root causes that we've identified what normally goes wrong when it comes to predetermined objectives specifically. So I'll pass
over
all questions here.
Yeah, Rishki Cappuccino. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your questions and the reply by the AG's office. Our next engagement as Select Committee on Finance will be on the 23rd of July, and I received confirmation when we will be dealing with SARS. We are all clients of such as we sit around this table. For that engagement, the meeting will be South African Reserve Bank. They need 2 days to take us through what they want to tell us. More in an intensive type of workshop. But through our committee work on the Matara, we will deal with that. Thank you, honorable members. That brings us to the end of this meeting. The meeting is adjourned. The house sitting starts at 14 hours. Thank you.